Yes, good afternoon. This is your weekly legal talk program, Law in Action, with me, Nafimani Haluendo, where we get to discuss various topics of national interest, everything law related. Now, today we have a very special show. Looking at the time, we only have 30 minutes, so I thought it would be prudent not to discuss a specific topic, but rather for us to have a general Q&A. So if there are listeners who have any legal issues that they want advice on, if there's any pressing legal questions, perhaps something that you have seen in the media, perhaps something that you're experiencing in your personal life, you can call us in studio and I will assist in breaking that down or giving you the most feasible legal advice on the specific topic. So any listeners who have any legal issue that they want legal advice on, you are free to call into radio today. So while that is hanging like the sword of Damocles, as they say, I would like to talk about general issues that commonly affect most of us in life. And I think the first issue I'd like to talk about is the issue of contracts. Now, there is a common practice among citizens where they usually go to lawyers after the fact, which means you only go see a lawyer once something goes wrong. But it's always advisable in the following issues to make sure that you have legal advice, that you have a lawyer look through the following things. And the first is, whenever you are borrowing someone money, I understand in African culture, borrowing money is a very friendly issue in the beginning. And you ordinarily do not want anything in writing because the assumption is that the person will pay you back. But my experience in practice is that you should always have a contract. I see we have a caller on the line. You should always have a contract drawn up in the event that the person you are borrowing money does not pay you back. Eagle FM, you're alive. Eagle FM, you're alive. Hola, you alive?
Yes, Nafimani, good evening.
Yes, good evening.
Yes, I would like to ask something. Eh?
Yes, who are we speaking to?
Let's say it's John from Windhoek.
Okay, John.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to know, let's say, for example, I'm married in a community of property.
Yes.
And then I buy a property, let's say a house or a farm.
Yes.
And then I have that property registered in the name of a trust.
Yes.
Not in a CC or not in the individual's name. I put it in the trust.
Yes.
In case of a divorce.
Yes.
I get divorced. I bought the property.
Yes.
I register it in the name of a trust. In case of a divorce, what will happen? Will we, is the other spouse, let's say a wife in this case, will she be entitled to anything under that trust? Let's say she is not a beneficiary under that trust.
Yeah, the most important question is who are the beneficiaries under the trust?
Let's say I am a beneficiary and my kids.
Well, the first thing I would like to inform you is that if you are married in community of property,
yes,
remember there are legal consequences to you being married in community of property. One of those consequences is that all the property that either spouse buys is in community, meaning belongs to the joint estate.
Yeah.
Now, because that is a legal contract, so to say, upon divorce, the courts really look at whether you try to circumvent that contract. Meaning, for instance, let's assume you have extramarital children.
Yeah.
During your marriage, you are, as because they are entitled to the support of their father, for instance, you can buy property and put it in trust for, say, for instance, your extramarital children, because that is a genuine acquisition of property for an interested party, for instance. Or you can buy property and maybe put it in trust and the beneficiaries are, for instance, members of the community. Yeah, but where you are married in community of property, but you open a trust and then you start buying property and putting it in that trust and you name yourself as a beneficiary, meaning you are now trying to circumvent the marriage regime, there is a possibility, depending on the facts, that a court might rule that
that property belongs to the joint estate.
Mm-hmm. So they will look at it as if one is hiding something under a trust.
Well, not as a general rule, but that is one mm-hmm. thing that you must consider.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that the courts look at, where they say, mm-hmm. for instance, you acted in a way where you are trying to circumvent the regime, the marriage regime.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are instances where the court will then rule that is property belonging to the joint estate.
Okay.
Yeah. But as I've indicated, where, for instance, you buy property and that property is put in trust and the beneficiaries are your children, or let's say, for instance, your children are the custodians of uh-huh. a specific company and you are perhaps just running the company as a director, then that uh-huh. that would automatically be property that falls outside of the joint estate.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Sure. And this issue of marriage in community of property.
Yes.
After that, is there no another way out to say, another legal channel that one can use to say, we are opting out without being divorced?
Well, that's one of the issues that I wanted to address now, that it's always good to get advice before entering into some of these marriage regimes, because mm-hmm. it's quite serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite serious. And you'll have to understand that if you are married out of community of property,
mm-hmm.
For instance, you find contracts where we call the anti-nuptial contracts, which are more flexible, which says, for instance, you can get married out of community of property, but there is a joint estate. We call it with an accrual system, meaning you are married mm-hmm. out of community of property. You can mm-hmm. do your business on the one side. You can acquire property alone on the one side, but there is mm-hmm. a provision that allows you as a family to build jointly, meaning you'll have a state which is a joint estate where uh-huh. you can specify to say, this estate or this property that I'm buying is part of our joint estate, although we are married uh-huh. out of community of property.
Interesting.
And that one is the more advisable marriage regime, because it means that generally as a husband, you can do business. And for instance, if you accrue losses in your business and they need to come attach certain property, for instance, they will not touch your marital home. Say, for instance, if it belongs to your to your spouse, to your wife. But it also makes provision that you can, for instance, get property in the north together. You can have a car that belongs to the joint estate. You can buy you can buy furniture that belongs to the joint estate. So that is the more advisable marriage regime.
Okay.
Yeah, as opposed to being married solely in community of property, because the only other way that you can escape that marital regime is through divorce.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nafimani, for the explanation.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, that is John calling us from Windhoek, and he simply wanted to find out, if you are married in community of property, is there a way to circumvent, meaning to escape the legal consequences of that marriage regime? And the answer is really generally no. Of course, there is a possibility for you to buy property for other persons, such as your children or perhaps the community member or your mother or someone else. But as a general rule, when you are married in community of property, all the property that is acquired in the person or in the personal name of either spouse belongs to the joint estate, which means it belongs to both parties to the marriage. And as I was speaking before John called in, it really is advisable to always ensure that when you enter, be it into a marriage regime, be it into a contract, I was just talking now about borrowing money, it is imperative for you to get legal advice. And in fact, you should get a contract. If you're about to borrow anyone any substantial amount of money, you should make sure that you have a contract in place. And as I've always indicated when I'm addressing this issue, it's not an issue or a question of mistrust to say that you do not trust the party that you are dealing with, but it's really a question of ensuring that your rights are protected in the event that anything goes wrong. Now, it's also important to remember that one of the many things that can go wrong are not necessarily resulting from the other party defaulting on payment, but the other party can, for instance, pass away, or they could go missing, or they could even become incapacitated where, for instance, someone else has to manage their affairs. And in that situation, you would normally have a call for anyone who has a claim to that person's estate, meaning those people who are owed money must come forth and lay their claim. Now, it's going to be very difficult for you if you don't have anything in writing. And of course, I understand that it's African tradition that most of our transactions are done orally. But in this new dispensation of serious litigation back and forth, it's really advisable that whenever you enter transactions, you must have a contract in place. As I've indicated, today we are not discussing any specific topic. I am going to be giving free legal advice to members of the public. If you have any pressing legal issues that you've always wanted advice on, perhaps you have a personal issue that you want advice on of a legal nature, please feel free calling to studio and I will address it. Now, another issue that I just wanted to talk about today generally is the issue of land. And when it comes to the issue of land acquisition, so we have a caller on the line. I think we've lost that caller. Yes. There's a question that I was asked earlier this morning regarding the issue of land. See, we have another caller on the line.
I was asked.
Caller, you alive?
Yes.
Caller, you alive?
Yes, how's the evening, boss?
Very well. How are you? Who are we speaking to?
I was speaking to Mlemba from Valvesby.
Mlemba from Valvesby?
Yes.
Yes, sir. How can we assist?
The question I want to ask, eh?
Yes.
I was a bit worried by the Bank of Namibia. You remember when that Chinese was robbed of 1.4 million?
Yes.
Then the Bank of Namibia come and say, there is nothing wrong with someone to keep such amount of money.
Yes.
But if I recall very well, the Windhoek road block between Windhoek and Okanja.
Yes.
There is a multiple of people, Namibian, and Angolian.
Yes.
Who is their money being taken away by the police? But up to today, you never hear if the person who was having that money, whether they steal the money or whether the police give back the money. Because it's a matter of question. Look, if there's nothing wrong for me to keep the amount of money in my house,
yes,
why is it a problem for me to keep an amount of money in my car? Why is the police taking, if the police bring you 30,000 and the lot broke, they will never leave you.
Yes.
But you have an individual who has robbed 1.4 million. But now the bank come out publicly and say, there is nothing wrong with staying with such amount of money. But we have cases of people whose money was taken by the state. I think it's all these people whose their money was taken, especially the Windhoek or Kanja Roadblock. I think they must go through the state because their state has no local stamps.
This money that was taken at the Okanja Roadblock, when was this?
I think it's, I recall that time, this Delius Sulunga, that time he was the Deputy Inspector General. He was there. He was the one who went to collect those money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know a Namibian and Angolian who was found with 2 million or something like that. But it's a lot of money, even 60,000. There's a lot of people who their money was confiscated at Okanja and the Windhoek road broke.
Yes.
So, We need, and those money when it was taken, I check, even in Valvesby, there is a guy also whose his money was taken between the lot block of Swakopmund and Valvesby, a person from DRC. I think it was $100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
$100,000.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is just here now, he's even 10 years in the country. He's not being prosecuted. The government is not. The police is not returning his money. Now you don't understand. But when it's the money of a Chinese, the government will come out and pronounce itself.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I want to comment is on the ticket.
Yes.
I don't understand because our ticket. I remember that time. The government of Namibia have just seen when South Africa increased their ticket. And they bring that legislation here. I don't know even if this ticket that people are being written today for 8,000, 4,000. I don't know whether if they are illegal, if they are legal in Namibia. Yeah, because somewhere, somehow, I know, like in Zimbabwe, a lot of South African companies, they want to use labor law, South African labor law here. But always, Namibians are always winning that case because they want to apply the South African labor law, but our law is different to that of South Africa. So we have certain articles where they are corresponding, but in other words, they are different. So we want also you to explain to us, is this ticket that we have been written today, are they legal in Namibia, or is just this things of Namibia copy and pasting from South Africa?
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, boss.
Okay, thank you.
Enjoy your weekend. Tomorrow I will be in Windhoek also.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah. Same to you.
So,
those are very, very interesting questions from Balfour Bay. Now, let me just address the first issue with regards to money and acquisition of money and when the police may seize money. Now, the first thing we must understand is there's a difference between holding money of Namibian currency, meaning you have, for instance, 30,000, 50,000, 100,000, or even a million in the case of the Chinese, in local currency, and having money in foreign currency. Now, the customs, there are custom rules that apply. Let me just take this caller so that I can address these questions at the same time.
Yes, caller, you're live.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's take them two or three so that you answer them at once.
Okay.
Everybody, good evening. How are you?
I'm cool. How are you, Uncle Banner?
Fine, thank you.
Yes.
So I wanted actually to get to expand more on the land property of on land of yes. land or land whatever.
Yes.
But before I preempt that, let me find out, because let's say this is just an opinion that I want to see.
Yes.
If, for example, a person is a witness actually,
mm-hmm.
and the person has to testify before the competent court of law.
Yes.
And obviously, I don't know, you know, common sense is also there in the law.
Mm-hmm.
So by using your common sense, and you know that this particular, say, accused,
mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's already accused or just accused,
mm-hmm.
is trying to dodge the questions that are put to him,
yes.
before him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to dodge them deliberately.
Yes.
So, for the purpose that perhaps is just known by that person, and you know very well that the person is actually trying to just avoid the questions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the penalty on that question? Because the counselor, the legal counselor, might be pressing the person and say, please. And please, you understand?
Yes.
And you are also not allowed to intimidate the client,
mm-hmm.
with those questions. So that is the first one. The second one, on the property ownership.
Yes.
I know this is a very complex issue. I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe we are just trying to apply this simplistic kind of approach to
yes.
this complex issue problem. So, because I know very well that even before independence,
mm-hmm.
so there were some degrees of property ownership,
mm-hmm.
in terms of land, in terms of it. Despite the fact that there are land that were actually appropriated or taken by force.
Yes.
So, and then for us now to recompense,
mm-hmm.
that social injustice that was done in the past,
mm-hmm.
how exactly do we address that issue without intruding into people's rights?
Sorry, Uncle Ben, I want to understand you properly. The issue that you would want to address, is it the issue of land stolen before independence?
Yes, because land ownership.
Yes.
Because when we say, for example, when the Swapo government took over,
mm-hmm.
so the land was already in the hands of the landlord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, there is a need for us to address that in the past social injustice.
Yes.
Okay, because we know very well that the land was also by force.
Yes.
And the ownership, full ownership to the land, which was acquired before independence,
mm-hmm.
is to be respected.
Yes.
How do we then address this land question without, of course, I know that there is a appropriation with compensation, with just compensation and things like that, because this one seems not to be enough, maybe so slow, but how then can we address this land issue without intruding into private, into people's private property, ownership?
Okay, now I understand, Nakobona.
So, thank you very much, Nafimane. God bless you.
Okay, thank you.
Good.
So, there are the four questions. The first question is relating to money, the Chinese and people whose money was being taken by the police at the roadblocks. The second is regarding the legality of tickets in the country. Uncle Bwana also came in asking two questions. One relating to, well, the last one relating to land. And I think the second question, I think we have another caller on the line. Let me just attempt to answer these questions before I take two more callers. So there is a difference when you hold money. There's a difference between holding money that is in local currency and holding money that is in a foreign currency. So in terms of our banking laws, customs requires you to declare money exceeding 50,000 Namibian dollars when you are entering the country. And in terms of the possession itself, I understand that it's exceeding US 1,000, I think speaking on correction, where if you are holding money exceeding, for instance, 50,000 and it's in local currency and it's not declared, then of course the police have a probable cause to investigate. Now, I would want to also indicate that these are simply custom-related issues. So we are speaking about coming into the country without declaring foreign currency. So police may, on reasonable suspicion that, for instance, you have money that you have not declared. One incident that was explained in the office bay was that it's a man from DRC. So the police might then have that suspicion that this gentleman is a foreigner. Perhaps they asked for his passport and they saw he recently came into the country. If they then find foreign currency, they'll of course ask questions, or in fact ask you to follow them to the police station so that you can establish whether you have declared such monies or whether you have a permit to have money exceeding that which is allowed by law. So that is the one instance in which police can, for instance, stop you and confiscate money if it's foreign currency. Now, assuming that it's local currency, remember, the Criminal Procedure Act allows for the police either to arrest without a warrant in certain circumstances and also to seize certain documents or articles if they believe that they were used in the commission of a crime. So let's assume the police finds you are a 21-year-old, you have 50,000 in your pocket, or you have 180,000. The basis as to whether a police officer will arrest you is really dependent on whether there's a reasonable belief or a reasonable apprehension that the money is a proceed of crime, for instance. And it really goes back to the explanation that one gives to a police officer. And I really do understand the frustration of the caller from Valthis Bay, where he indicates that it comes off as if there's no element of fairness in the Namibian police or the way the Namibian police handle civilians. I can see how that can be the perception, but of course we have to look at some of the facts. If, for instance, a person is a business person and they are trading on a daily basis where they can say they are making 100,000 or 80,000. Of course, one can understand that if they have 1.2 million in their house or they have 1.2 million in the business, even if a police officer has to come there and ask them, where have you received that money? They can easily explain the origins of the money. Whereas it would not be the same if they approached 21 or 20, 32-year-old unemployed Nafimania. Or even if I'm employed, they might ask you, as a lawyer, what are you doing with 7 million or 10 million on your persons? Where did you get that money? You then have to explain the origins of that money. Secondly, we also need to understand that when police conduct roadblocks, they are operating a very complex network that has to fight crime. And there are many reports of crime in the country, some unreported even in the newspapers. And where they have intelligence officers, they might have received a tip-off regarding people who are trying to move money from one region to another. That may be money that was robbed from a house. It may be money that was taken from a specific business. So if a police officer finds you or finds various people with money at the roadblock, it's not in all circumstances that the arrest or the confiscation of that money would be suspicious or would be an unfair arrest or an unfair acquisition of your property or your money. Because the police would really be acting based on the many reports that they receive and whether or not there's a reasonable suspicion that the money was proceeds of crime. Now, secondly, on the question of tickets, the law is quite clear on tickets. And the Road Traffic Act of 1999 is really the one that dictates how much, what type of fine can you get for which offense, how much that fine will be, and it depends on the type of offense that you commit and the extreme nature of that offense. For instance, if a police finds you driving 123 kilometers an hour, just 3 kilometers faster than what is permissible in law, of course, the highest penalty might be 8,000, but a police officer has a discretion based on the type of offense that was committed and also the extreme nature of the offense to say, I will either give you a fine of 1,500 or 400 or 800. But what I would advise is that whenever you get a fine and you feel you have not committed the offense, or in fact, even if you feel that the fine is too high, I always advise that people should approach courts. We have a caller on the line. Let me just take this one really quickly.
Eagle FM, caller, you are live.
Good afternoon, good evening, Nafimane.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yep, I want to entertain Article 16 as far as it's related to allocating rights.
Yes, who are we speaking to?
You are speaking to Theron, calling from Windhoek.
Okay, Theron, yes, Article 16. This is of the Constitution, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, in Article 16.1,
yes,
sub-Article 1,
mm-hmm,
the only condition...
Mm-hmm.
That is placed upon the right to property.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one as far as foreigners are concerned? Only foreigners, Namibians, you and I, tall, short, female, male, you know, in all our diversity, have the full rights of Article 16. But in Namibia,
sorry, you are talking about Article 16.1.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The only condition that is part of that sub article is the condition that is placed in terms of ownership of land of property by persons who are not Namibian.
Yes, but that provision is not a law anyway in the country.
I understand.
Yeah,
I understand because it has to be activated by an act of parliament.
Yes,
because it continues. I just wanted to, because I'm just driving towards the point.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make here is, you see, there are three classes of land in Namibia from a private citizen's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, there is commercial land,
mm-hmm,
be it farmland,
mm-hmm,
let's say farmland, commercial land, then there is communal land, then there's land within local authorities. Now, Article 16 does not make a distinction between classes of land.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Article 16 is concerned, and this is my layman's perspective,
mm-hmm,
from my 32, 30-something years of life on earth,
mm-hmm,
and my intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you and I want to go into any communal area,
yes,
want to exercise to its fullest,
mm-hmm,
the rights that Article 16 accords us in terms of land ownership. For example, I want a piece of land, it's 200 square meters, and I want to go. I want to acquire that land and have it registered in my name through the deeds office.
Mm-hmm.
The government will never give you.
Yes.
That, but you're still in the one Namibia where Article 16 applies.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah, we have to remember that the right to acquire property it means that you are allowed to have property if the property regime allows for you to have it. So say,
which one is the property regime?
The property regimes, of course, are the relevant laws, both parliamentary laws that were in effect before and after independence. If they if those laws make provision for you to get to acquire property, you have a right to acquire that property.
Okay, so now what I'm saying is, there is no law, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
There is no law that makes it illegal.
Yeah.
In this country, that differentiates between in the constitution. Let me go back to the constitution. The constitution does not differentiate between communal, or commercial land, or land in local authorities.
No, you are right.
So. That's why the only condition in sub-article 1 under article 16 is only foreigners. Do you understand?
Yes.
So what if one day I want to go, I'm from Zambezi region, I want to go to my ancestral land. Let me call it that.
I'm just getting a notice here that we are going to an automatic commercial break in.
I will hold.
8 seconds. Okay.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Jep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie frekseer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dit is die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dit is soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dit is die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information.
Law in action. We are back on air. Say you were saying.
Yeah, so I was saying, Article 16 is only sets one condition that applies to foreigners with their rights. It curtails the rights of foreigners at Parliament's behest in terms of owning property in the country.
Yes.
You and I, who are citizens of this country, have no such restrictions.
Yes.
Now, what if, like I was saying, I go to my region, there's a piece of land which no one objects outside of the proclaimed local authority in the pure communal land of this country, and I'll go and say, I want that land
to acquire communal land, yes.
Not communal land. Yes. Remember, I'm relying solely on Article 16. Let's not call it anything yet.
Okay, but
you understand?
Yes.
Because in the constitution, there is no such thing as communal land.
Yeah, but remember, say that Article 16 must be read in line with other provisions of the constitution.
Which ones are those ones?
You, for instance, look at Article 116, which says that all laws that were in effect, I'm not sure if it's 116 or 100, that says that all laws that were in effect. It's Article 140 actually that says.
Hello.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I know that one.
Yes.
Just
hold.